Session number 17629, Mr. David Ridley, Reel 8.
Mr. Ridley, Reel 8. Had you been married since coming into the army?
Yes, I was married at Brunswick, near enough a year after my 21st birthday. I married a local girl. I don't like the word gangs, but we used to talk about in groups in those days, boys and girls. But it was only for friendship. There was no, you know, sex or anything like that like he is these days. That came when he got married. And when the war started, I suddenly realised there was only Vera and I left. All the others had gone in the army or on the various jobs. So we more or less got more close together and... And when I joined the army, they'll say I was in about a year and I asked permission to get married. And we were married there.
So had to get your officer's permission, had you?
Well, I went and asked. I thought you had to. I went and asked the company commander. Of course, you had to go and ask for leave, so the reason why. So I got a week's leave, right, and that was it.
Coming back to Folkestone, you were telling me that on parade once the Messerschmitts attacked the barracks.
Yes, I don't know the name of the barracks now, but I happened to be on on quarter guard that day, and we were on the square being inspected. And from the seaside, there was the sea, the cliffs, and then there was a row of garages. And over the top of... We didn't see them coming along. They used to come skimming the water, you know. And we didn't see that. And the next thing we knew, these Messerschmitts were just flipping over the top of the garages and machine gunning. But we were too close to them. I don't know whether it was the German Air Force training or what, I don't know. They never seemed to be dropping the bombs at the correct places. As I say, they came across over the top of these garages, machine gunning, and they dropped a couple of bombs, but they dropped right down in among the civilians. They missed the barracks altogether. And that happened lots of times. Like previously, I was talking about when we were in Torquay. There was lots of places on there where troops were stationed, but... They dropped this bomb right on an infant school.
We were talking about some of the courses that you'd been on. Do you recall any others?
Yes, well, I think I've done most courses apart from one. I was selected to go on an officer's course. Well, unfortunately, I didn't make it. I don't know why. They must have thought I would make an officer. And yet, so whenever I went into action in Italy, I was doing an officer's job all the time. And I think there was only once all the time I was in action that I had an officer. And he only came to my platoon just to give me a bit of a rest because I was, you know, it's a big responsibility taking a platoon into action.
So you actually went on the course itself, though?
Yes, I went on a course.
What did that entail?
Selection course. Well, a lot of... You do a physical training part of it, and they sort of run you down and get you tired, and then they give you a problem. Then you had lectures and group discussions. I always remember one at Howard, the spirit of the bayonet, that was what we had to discuss. And then you dined with all the instructors were officers. You dined with those. to see what your table manners was like and things like that. I think it was a week. I'm not quite sure. I think we went for a week. And he assessed you there, and you either got a commission or you didn't.
And you say you didn't. You
no, I didn't. I didn't get a commission in that one.
Are there any other memories of 17th Battalion that we haven't covered?
I don't think so. Well, at the back end of when well, after I'd been with the 17th for a while, they were talking about sending them abroad. And that time we were in Bournemouth, actually, and they split the battalion in half and sent half abroad, and the others remained in England. Well, I was in the second half. I was stuck in England. I did hear that the boat that was the troop ship that was taking the first half of it got torpedoed, but apparently it was untrue, because later on I met those people that were in the first group in Cairo. While I was with the second group, we did an exercise for the practice of D-Day.
So this was what, early 1944?
Yeah. Then after that, I was finally sent abroad. And they sent me all the way from Forks and right up to Greenock to get a boat.
What date was this when you actually moved?
Offhand, I can't remember now. I tell you, the name of the boat, you call the boat the Cameronian. And we were the first, well, I said to Vera, I said, well, look, I said, when you move like that, you always go to a transit camp. I said, well, whichever transit camp I'm in, I'll send for you, see, we're going to have a few days together. Because my initial aim, when I first joined the army, and they offered me a promotion, I said, well, if I take promotion, I'm stopping here a little bit longer. So, anyway, off I went. The train pulled right along the dock side. We got off the train onto a lighter, from the lighter straight out of this Cameronian.
Was it a large draft from the 17th Battalion?
Oh, that's quite, well, the whole battalion, well, you got about 600 men there.
So the battalion ceased to exist at that time, did it?
Yes, it finished that. And I always remember, on ship, you've got your own NCOs. You've got a ship's RSM and people like that. And you've got your own officers. Although the captain of the ship controls everything, he doesn't interfere with troops normally. And this RSM sent for all sergeants to go to his office. Now, there was the three sergeants that was with me. One was an old soldier, and the other one was a young one, younger than me. And when we got sent for, this old soldier said, oh, I must go to the toilet. I found out why later on, because when I got into the RSM's office, he says, right, D-Deck, who's down on D-Deck? I says, our troops are, sir. He says, well, I says, well, I'm not a senior NCO. He says, doesn't matter. He says, you were here. So I got the job of being deck sergeant of D-Deck, and that was below the water line. And what a job that was.
What kind of duties did you have to carry out?
Well, you had to see that the men were fed. You had to see them bedded down. You had to show them how to, because you slept on the floor. You slept on the forms. You slept on the tabletop, and then you had hammocks above that. I mean, you had about 600 men in an area that you wouldn't put 10 horses in. They know it's dead. And you can imagine 600 men in a very, very small area, how much, you know, rubbish and that was left. And every morning we had to turf them all out, and I had a detailed fatigue parties. And we used to have to clean all the decks up, put it in baskets, the rubbish in baskets. We weren't allowed to throw it over the side till night time. Oh, I don't know what a Caesar is going to be like if they ever drive up. Anyway, I worked like a Trojan, and I thought I'd, you know, the deck was, I mean, looking at it in the beginning, it was terrible, but I thought I did a jolly good job. And the captain come down to inspect, and he had a torch, and he went behind a Roman or a great big pipe, and he found one matchstick, and I got a telling off for that. But apart from that, we had ablutions on the top deck, and you had to go over there and see that they were cleaned out. There was no spirit on this particular ship. There were a lot of bottles of lemonade, and all had these metal tops. And there were metal tops that were in the sinks, so were all over. Never mind.
It must have been quite smelly on a packed deck like that.
It is, yes, sir.
Particularly when you go to the hot climates.
Now, the only sensation I ever got on ships, I used to get a sort of lightheaded a little bit. But I was always advised to always eat dry biscuits when sailing, in case of, you know, because, I mean, there was people vomiting all over the place. Somebody had to clean it up. Another peculiar thing on this Cameroonian, we were 3 weeks on this ship, or maybe more, I don't know, but it was at least 3 weeks. And we only got them in the Mediterranean, and they did say that we would travel the Atlantic to dodge submarine packs. And it was rumored that we nearly touched America's coast one time. Well, we no sooner got into the Mediterranean when we got dive bombed. I don't think they hit anyone or hit any ship. And that lasted for about an hour. And then we finally docked at a place called Philippeville.
Before we go to that point, can we talk a little bit about your journey? Where was your accommodation on the ship?
Well, I think it was about the second deck down. You see, on a ship, officers travel first class. Wartime, I didn't want to wear it, but the officers travel first class. And sergeants and warrant officers travel second class. Normally, if there was accommodation for it. And then the other ranks, well, probably third class, I don't know. The difference between first and second class was you had the same food as the officers, but the officers had a tablecloth, and we didn't. I was always lucky to travel second class on every ship I was on, because it varied according to the size. If it was only a small ship, all the officers used to take the first class. But I was always lucky to travel second class, and this entailed a bunk. You got a bunk instead of a hammock or...
And did you have your own room, or was that still part of the deck?
No, I had, one part of the deck. We might have 100 in, but they were all bunks. And each NCO had a bunk.
So it was a long journey. How did you pass the time? Other than, of course, you say, keeping things clean.
Time. Well, most of my time was taken up. Then you used to do a little physical training. You couldn't do much. And I'll tell you why in a minute. Because you couldn't have troops galloping around the decks, because it used to shake your ship. Now, I remember we docked it, I think it was at this Philippeville, and all the troops there all moved to the dock side, and the captain had to get over the tannoy and tell them to get back because they were tipping the ship over.
Did you get into organising things like boxing matches or competitions of that kind?
No, nothing like that.
Housey, this kind of game that was played regularly?
The only games that you ever got, you used to run a raffle. They say in a period of time how far the ship had travelled. And that was about it. I mean, you couldn't do weapon trimming because all your weapons were taken off you. So whenever you went on ship, all weapons were taken right down into the bottom hold, and they were locked up there. And I don't know, for safety reasons, mutinies and things they got. You couldn't do weapon trimming.
Was the food on the ship better than what you'd had on land?
Well, yes, in lots of cases it was, because everything on a ship is cooked there and then. The bread is baked by the ship's cooks. I don't know I suppose they have got big fridges and stores the meat and all that, but everything was fresh. It was really nice to get a nice hot roll for your breakfast. Yes, I thought, on a whole, the ship's fed you pretty well.
Was there a canteen?
No. Well, there was this canteen that sold lemonade. That was all.
You said there's no alcohol.
No, not on that particular ship. In fact, I can't remember any ship that I was on there was any alcohol on.
Was it difficult to retain discipline with such a crowded vessel?
Oh, no. I never had any problem with that. I always maintain you treat the man as you treat yourself. I respected the man's whatever it was. There was only one major thing that I never did like. Someone talking indirect to you, you know, like, in fact, I once charged a chap for this. I was being transported on a truck in Italy, and this chap was talking to his mate loud enough for me to hear. And I went up and I says, look, lad, I says, I don't like people talking indirect to me. I says, if you've got something to say to me, say it. Then they came out with a mouthful. So I says, right, you're on charge. And I took him in front of the colonel. Well, the company commander first, they sent us to the colonel. And it was Colonel Vaux, you know, the Vaux's breweries. He was the colonel there. They used to call him Daddy Vaux for reasons. Well, he said to this chap, after I explained what it, you know, I mean, he used bad language at me, he says, and they all remember he had a punch, he says, well, you know, you're a naughty boy, you shouldn't say things they had to a son. Well, I just looked, you know, and that was that. I think that's why he was called Daddy Vaux. I think he got killed in an aircraft crash. He came coming home or something like that.
Were there any problems at all on the journey itself?
None whatsoever. Apart from this clean. You had this cleaning every day. And it took you nearly all day to do it, you know. And then you had a ship inspection. Then you would probably have board drill. Then they used to do exercises. They would have a board drill and say you had to run along this corridor and up these stairs to get onto the top deck. You would suddenly run along these corridor and there'll be an officer, someone standing at the stairs and say these stairs is out of action, they're being bombed, and you had to go and find yourself another way to get up on the deck. There was something rather amazing that happened to me during these exercises. I was running along this corridor and I saw these, every so often there was these chaps standing. I said to one, I says, what the devil are you doing? He says, we're on the watertight doors. I says, all right. I says, you know, what happens like? He says, well, if the ship got bombed and holed, he says, we would get orders to shut these doors. I says, well, what about if there was anyone on the other side? He says, that saved the ship and not the troops. And then rather, you know, sort of, I imagine it was feasible, like, but not like that anybody would like.
Was dress allowed to be casual on board the ship? Dress, you're dressing in.
No. You always ought to be dressed properly.
When you came to the hotter climates, obviously your uniform would have to change.
Well, that's another funny story. When you went to the depot and you got your first stripes and all that, you got them, and then you become dress conscious. You went to the tailors and you got your battle dress tucked in here and there to make yourself more smarter. Well, that all happened at the depot. Then, in the 17th Battalion, we were due, as far as I know, to go out of the Far East. So we were all issued with topical equipment, which was just shirts and shorts, pith helmets. Of course, then again, desk conscious again, we went to the tailor and got white stripes sewed on your arms and got your things tucked in and all that. And we eventually landed off in Italy, and all there was no sun in land, all that equipment was taken from us. So that was a waste of money.
Were you allowed to sleep on the deck at night when it got really bad with the heat?
At just certain parts, and there was only a few people allowed on. Most of the time you were employed doing something, but if it was, you know, it was a free time, there was only a certain amount allowed to be on the top deck.
You say you stopped off at Philippeville in Belgian Congo. Did you get ashore there?
No. What happened there, nearly all the ship emptied out. Where they were going, I don't know. But the Durham stopped on. And then looking farther over in the dock, there was one or two ships there. And one of those, they emptied that one out and transferred them onto our ship. And a lot of them came onto my deck.
Which regiment did they come
and
from?
They were French Canadians. I've seen the Hermann Göring regiment, which was 6 footers, but these men were massive. It was one below 6 foot. They say they were all lumberjacks, and I can imagine, so they were massive men. And the amazing part was, the sergeant major, he wasn't 6 foot, or just under 6 foot, but believe me, he had his chest and his shoulders, he was built like a tank. And he came to me, he says, if you get any trouble off this lot, he says, come and see me. I said, don't you worry, I will. And it was quiet as mice.
No bother.
When Indian troops used to come on a deck like that, the best time to catch them was at meal time. So you caught them all sitting on the various tables. And I would go to each table and say, right, how many NCOs is on here? And I would nominate an NCO to be in charge of that table. He had to nominate men to go to the cookhouse to get the food. He also had to nominate men for fatigue duties or cleaning the decks and things like that. And that's the only way I could do it. You couldn't do it just going around on your own.
Did they speak English or French? Or
oh,
both?
Yes. I never heard them speak French, so they didn't all speak English. But they were amazing, massive men.
Did they get on well with the Durhams?
Oh, yes. Just all mingled in. Of course, we set sail. I think it was the next day we set sail. Well, it was only a day to Italy. We went from there to Italy.
Did you know who you were replacing or which draft you were going to?
No.
At this point?
No, we were just a bunch, or half the 17th Battalion.
Were you excited at going abroad?
Not really. No, I don't think anybody's excited to go into action. That's where you're heading. There was one thing when we pulled into the harbour at Naples, that's where we landed. It was littered with sunken ships. Of course, we didn't know where we were. We didn't know where we were going. Well, we had a sergeant who was a bit of a scholar, and I think he studied a few maps in his time. And he sat and he worked it out. He says, well, look, he says, looking at this, he says, that, there was a volcano there. He says, that must be Vesuvius. And he worked it out, and sure enough, it was Naples. From there, we were taken off.
Do you remember the date that you landed? in Italy.
Oh,
what year was it?
Well, it was somewhere. I've got it here somewhere. It was sometime in 43, about end of 43. I've got here, joined the Sherwood Foresters on the 14th of 2nd, 43. So it must have been maybe the 10th, October 43. Because we didn't go out at the Sherwood Foresters. And March, soon in the middle of the night, north of a big park where there was a few, and that's where we built the Agent Depot. Oh, that was terrible. We stopped there for about a fortnight. I'm counting this. We used food. We just got your food and your mess there and you just sat on the ground. They were sitting eating your food. Had a ring tins, starving. You would, you know, give them all a little bit. That was.
Is this part of your first impressions of Italy?
Oh, yes. Well, I mean, the German, as far as I know, whichever country he went to, he stripped it, sent everything back to Germany. He did the same with Italy, although the Italians were supposed to be fighting with him. But they had very little to eat. And as I say, these, you know, lovely little children standing around, you know, begging for food. And, like all British soldiers, they're all soft-hearted. You get most food away than you get yourself.
What were you doing in the fortnight or so that you were there?
Not a great lot. Just keep yourself clean, and there was no duties to do. And I remember one night we went out for a walk, but there was no cafes to go to. You couldn't get a drink nowhere. There was nothing, see? Because the war had just passed over Naples, so the civilian population had nothing. But I remember, not far from this park, there was a great big house, and it was taken over by the Americans. Now, what it was, I don't know, but there was Americans in this. And this sentry was standing on the gate, and we started talking to him, like, and he says, "Well, where have you come from?" I said, "Oh, up there." And he thought we'd come from from the front line, where we'd never seen the angry man then. Oh, never in the world. And we got about wanting something to eat, you know, because we were rolling, hungry, you know, giving all of our food away. "Are you hungry?" he said. I said, "Yes. Come with me." And he left his post, you know, and he took us up to this house, took her into the kitchen, and I suppose their equivalent of Cousin or whatever it was. And he told them, he said, "Oh, help yourselves." And you name it, there were buckets full of coffee and spam and bread. They were had a right old tuck in there.
Was this your first meeting with Americans?
That was my first meeting with Americans. I met them a lot after that, like, but in fact, I was four along beside them. Well, after a period of time there, I would say maybe about a fortnight, we were all split up. Some went to the Durham Light Infantry. I was the 16th Battalion. I think it was the 16th Battalion. Some went to the Sherwood Foresters. And some went to the, I think it was the Lincoln Regiment. They had like a tiger as a badge. At least I presume it was a tiger. Anyway, I went with the Sherwood Foresters.
How did you feel about having to change regiments?
Well, I wasn't happy at all. But, I mean, an order given is an order made, as far as I'm concerned. So I went to the Sherwood Foresters. I was in a platoon. We didn't have an officer. It was a sergeant in charge of the platoon. And there's a story about this on it. Whew. So I was with them a while, and we were up in the, I think it was the Gothic Lane, I'm not sure. Up in the mountains, anyway.